Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
And now Cable News brings you an in-depth report about President Barack Obama's veto of the Keystone XL pipeline bill.
My name is Julia DeGraw, and my position is Northwest Organizer with Food and Water Watch.
And of course, we're talking to you today because the president vetoed the Keystone XL project bill. What exactly does this mean? Where does it go from here?
Well, we think it's really good news that the president decided to veto this bill that kills the Keystone XL pipeline. But at Food and Water Watch, we are working to achieve a ban on fracking in the United States. There really is no safe way to use fracking to extract natural gas, and it damages our communities, drinking water, and the environment. And we view this as a really good step in the right direction, but we really need an actual ban on these practices. So while it is definitely a good step in the right direction, it is definitely just the beginning of improvement.
Now, here in Oregon, of course, we have a handful of projects that are related to fracking. Could you tell us something about could this have any impact on, for instance, the Jordan Cove or any of the other projects we know of?
That's a really good question. We are part of a coalition of groups that are fighting the liquefied natural gas or fracked gas exports for both Jordan Cove and the North Coast proposal, Oregon LNG. Those pipelines would actually be piping fracked gas from the Rocky Mountain West so that we can export that gas to Asian countries. And we really think that this could be significant. We think that if a politician can oppose this pipeline but then turns around and supports a project like Jordan Cove, they seem to be missing the issue, which is that fracked natural gas in these pipelines are really dangerous proposals, and they don't belong in anybody's backyard.
Is all the action happening at the federal level? Are any of the state agencies or state officials able to have an impact on this?
I would actually argue that the action is happening on the state level. It would be a challenging circumstance if we had to rely on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, to stop this proposal from moving forward. We actually have a lot of opportunities here at the state level to stop all of these LNG export facilities from moving forward. We have the Department of Environmental Quality that has to do permitting, Department of State Lands, and several state agency level decisions that have to be made on these proposals before they can move forward. And ultimately, we really need leadership at the governor level to give these state agencies, the right to say no to these permits and to say no to these proposals that are bad for Oregonians and the environment, and not even really very good for our economy long term.
We, of course, have a new governor now. Has she given any indication whether she's in support or against some of these proposals?
All I can say is that the groups that are engaged in this issue and Oregonians who are really concerned about these pipeline and export facility proposals are excited about the opportunity to work with new leadership. We don't really have an idea of where Governor Brown will stand on these issues, but we're definitely going to work on getting in touch with her office and seeing if we can get some real leadership on this issue that frankly we were not getting from the previous administration.
How are things looking as far as the state legislature? Are there any good folks working up there in Salem on this? Or how's the legislature stand?
Well, I'm not actually as up to speed on the legislature on this issue. I believe that, you know, since it's primarily state agencies that are going to be denying or accepting these permits that these proposals are submitting, that it really does come down to the governor and these state agency heads to follow the law and do what's right for Oregon in protecting endangered species from these really dangerous proposals. I mean, if you look at Jordan Cove, they're talking about one of the largest dredging projects in Oregon history. There are dozens of endangered and threatened species that are threatened by both the pipeline and that dredging proposal for the export facility. We have a lot of reasons for our state agencies to intervene here and deny these permits, especially since we're not likely to get that kind of support at the federal level. So we really need leadership at the governor level and at the state agency level. And I'm not as up to speed on what's going on with the legislature on this, but ultimately when it comes to state agencies, they really do answer to the governor.
I see. Now, could you tell us something more about some more information about the other project? Jordan Cove has gotten a lot of attention, but it's, of course, not the only thing that that's going on out here with regard to liquefied natural gas.
Correct. So we've got the Oregon LNG proposal, which would be near Astoria, Oregon. And that's an interesting project in that the state or the county commissioners have actually put a stop to the development of any natural gas pipelines for this export facility in that area. So that does not mean that the fight is over there. There are still the company is still applying for permits from DEQ and FERC, and we are fighting those as well as a coalition. We've got groups like Columbia Riverkeeper that are really engaged on stopping that proposal from moving forward, and a really strong local group that is fighting this as well. So in both cases, we've got Riverkeeper organizations and other organizations that are really engaged in stopping this from moving forward. And across the board, people are very concerned about eminent domain being used to procure property from individual landowners. And that's something that landowners both in the North Coast and the South Coast are deeply concerned about, and they're a very strong part of this coalition of groups that are fighting these proposals.
Now, you said that county officials had been stepping up to try and block one of the proposals. Can the state override county officials, or do the counties have a final say?
Well, when it came to the pipeline decision, the state actually ended up siding with the county officials. They said that their decision was legal and that it should be able to stand. But that doesn't mean that there isn't still a process unfolding in that part of the state. Oregon LNG has not thrown in the towel, so to speak. So that fight does continue, even though the state has chosen to recognize the county commission's decision.
Now, moving forward, how can what are the next steps, I guess? What are we looking forward to now?
I would say the next steps, while these issues seem complicated because there are multiple state agencies and federal agencies involved in these permitting processes, we need not complicate the issue that much when it comes to what the individual Oregonian can do about this. These proposals. Oregonians should be embracing this opportunity to get in touch with a new governor and ask Governor Brown to take a stand and protect Oregon from these really dangerous proposals. We have, it's well within the law to deny these permits for LNG export and pipelines. We have a lot of reasons to say no, and our state agencies need to protect the state. And we really have this amazing opportunity with a new governor to get a real change in leadership from the very top on this issue. So I would encourage people to get in touch with Governor Brown. And they can also get in touch with their federal regulators as well. Senator Merkley really needs to be hearing from people. He has slipped quite a bit on this issue. It would be very good if he heard from his constituents that they really don't want to see natural gas exports anywhere in the state or those pipelines. So really I would say if you do one thing, send an email or a phone call to the new governor, Governor Brown. If we're going to do more than one thing, I would also encourage folks to get in touch with their federal representation to make sure that they're hearing from us at the federal level as well.
And now, where can people find out more information their website and all that.
Yeah, I would say if you're for Jordan Cove, I would really recommend that you look up Rogue Riverkeeper's website. They have a really great way for people to take action on this issue. There's a lot of other groups that are working on it, but they definitely have a really easy way for you to take action. And then for the North Coast, I would recommend getting in touch or looking up Columbia Riverkeeper. They do a lot of great work there, and they have a way for you to take action online as well. And that's what I would recommend.
Julia DeGroff, thank you.
Evan Weber, Executive Director, U.S. Climate Plan.
So the president earlier today vetoed the Keystone XL project bill. What exactly are the implications of his veto, and where do we go from here?
Well, the battle over the pipeline is far from over. This was a significant step, but still, the project has to get final review from the State Department and a final approval or rejection from President Obama. Now the bill goes back to Congress, where they are going to have the chance to try to override the presidential veto, but it's pretty clear they're not going to be able to do that. So once again, as always, the decision is in the president's hands of what to do on the Keystone Pipeline.
And so do we have any idea how long the State Department review is going to take, or is that open-ended?
It is open-ended, but, you know, pundits are saying and expecting that the president wants to make a decision on this soon. So it could be any time in the next couple of months.
Now, will this veto have any impact on fracking overall and our use of that technology?
So, this veto is just about the tar sands pipeline that was meant to ship oil from Canada to be exported in the Gulf in the United States. What this doesn't do is do anything about the rest of the president's dirty energy policies, including fracking and his so-called all-of-the-above energy strategy, which relies way too heavily on natural gas, has opened up drilling on the Atlantic coast yet again. What's clear is that we really need to move away from this 19th, 20th century fossil fuel economy and towards the clean, renewable energy of the future that the American public wants and is supportive of.
What sort of alternatives are you folks proposing?
Well, you have your usual favorites of wind and solar, which really have shown remarkable progress over the last couple of years in falling costs as well as their use here in the U.S. Wind and solar have both tripled, and now projections are saying that within the next decade, solar will be by far the cheapest energy source available for our use. What we're really proposing is that in order to move past just squabbling over single pipelines, we really need to take a look at the bigger picture and say, how are we going to transition into this 21st century clean energy economy? The transition is inevitable, but the question really is, will it happen fast enough to deal with the consequences of catastrophic climate change? And so what we need is bold leadership to put forward policy solutions that can urge that transition along and create robust and economically prosperous transition that will really move us forward. And so we have proposed a number of different policies that could do that within our organization. But what we really truly believe is that the American people know that these solutions are out there and ready, and we are looking to the American people to provide the leadership on these solutions, because they're not coming from our politicians.
What should people do?
Well, I'm glad you asked. We're launching a new campaign, and it's called the Future Power Plan. And it's to build the people power necessary that can create the political will to shift the way that we power our society and protect our planet for future generations. If you want to find out more, you can visit our website at usclimateplan.org, where you can get involved and join our first training call.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners about all this?
Well, the only reason that the president vetoed this pipeline today is because grassroots activists and popular movements have brought him to this point. And now it looks like he's likely to reject this controversial project for good. So what this really shows is what's possible when people come together and draw a line in the sand. But now what we need to do is make it clear that this is much bigger than just a single pipeline and really call for the transformative change that'll move us forward into the future. And together, if we continue to rally around the bold solutions that will lead us forward, we can do that.
All right. Evan Weber, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Doug.
This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
Hey there, listeners. Up next, we have Out Loud. It's 6 o'clock p.m., February 24th. You're listening to KBOO.